It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 544. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow, and also facebook.com/MikeNationNet. We have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows, the audio, the show notes. It's a great resource. And again, that's mtswiki.com. I have a jam-packed show. I have two quick stories from the trenches. One, I still need your help in diagnosing the problem and fixing it for a client. The other one, I'm going to share with you the solution to a new client that I was brought in for an emergency and was able to solve this remotely in under an hour. Then I have a utility that I found, a couple things actually, out of the latest issue of Maximum PC that I want to share. One is a Windows repair utility, and also we're going to talk about essential browser extensions, and then I have a stack of email with new questions and then follow-ups to some of the things I was asking about last week, including some great Windows 8.1 repair tips. Before we get started, the best service that you can use for remoting into your client's computers, or even maybe your work computer, Instant House Call. It is my go-to software. Anytime I need to remote in and fix a problem, the problem I'm going to talk about tonight, I was able to quickly have the client on Monday literally go to my landing page on instanthousecall.com. They clicked and downloaded the client in a matter of 60 seconds. I was connected in, taking control of their computer, and was able to solve the problem. I actually connected into multiple workstations at the same time and was able to compare and look at things. You can have up to 10 simultaneous connections. You can try Instant House Call free right now for 15 days by going to instanthousecall.com, download the trial, and use the promo code MikeTechShow. Again, you can get to it two ways, either clicking on the ad on the left-hand side of miketechshow.com or going directly to instanthousecall.com. Please remember to use the promo code MikeTechShow. The first problem, and I mentioned this last week, client has Comcast as their ISP. They get 85 meg down, but they're only getting 2-3 meg up. They're supposed to get 17. Now, the first thing you're going to say, oh, it's Comcast's fault. No. I actually connect in the back of the Comcast router and I get the numbers I'm supposed to get. I now have used two routers, a D-Link router and a Linksys router, and I'm getting the same reduced upload speed. I'm getting under 5 meg up all the time, no matter what options, and I've just flashed the new firmware on the Linksys router. I will not use, because this is a small business, but I consider a corporate, quote, environment, I will not use any firmware that's not supported by the manufacturer. I understand all of the great hacked firmware that you can use and do incredible things. Not for this client. Not for this router. So I don't know what's capping me. It's a Linksys Cisco E2000 router. But I had the same issue with the DI655 router from D-Link. We're having no trouble with the download, but I'm having trouble with the uplink. The upload is only under 5 meg. And again, when I eliminate the router, I get 17 meg. And I have all the defaults. The only thing on both routers is the QoS for the Polycom 8x8 phone. So my next course of action, actually tomorrow morning, I'm going to call tech support of 8x8 and see if they can shed some light into this. My next course is then call Linksys support. I really don't want to do that. I was on the phone with them. They couldn't even help me getting the latest firmware, which isn't even listed on their website anymore. So that was a worthless phone call to Linksys. Any other suggestions, any other help, I would greatly appreciate. Things that I'm missing that I could be looking at. I'm really hoping that 8x8 will shed some light into this. That would be great. On Monday, one of my clients, attorneys, gave me a referral to asking me to help one of their clients whose software that they use for all their billing and everything that they need to connect to this vertical software connects to a company that then they get to do all their processing. They have this on a server. Now they have workstations that can no longer connect. I call to initiate it first, trying to get an understanding of what it is before I maybe go down on site. And I have to travel into the city in the Philadelphia. And I was kind of hoping I could maybe fix this remotely. They describe several things. And the person I'm talking to doesn't have a grasp of all the IT and the situation. They don't really have a full-time IT person. They have someone that knows a little that helps out. So I was talking with him, trying to get an idea of what's going on. The first thing I had them do is download the Instant House Call client. I connect in, and I see that the error we're getting on the software states that there's some kind of a network issue or VPN problem. The first thing I think, does the server software work? And they assure me that it does. On the server, they're able to connect in, and it connects up to, I would say, the parent company or the where they're supposed to connect to. I'm trying to be as generic as possible without giving any information away about the client. Then they describe the new wiring that took place. Ah, maybe we have multiple networks going on. Verizon Fios changed their router too. So lots of infrastructure changes. Then I find out that this server was also shared by another company that has now broken away, and they got to keep the server. Lots of changes have been happening, and I'm trying to figure this all out. So the first thing we do is we get to basic networking, and I ping the server. I can ping the server. I can ping the router. The wired connection and the TCP/IP stack is working fine. I make sure we're on the same network. So I go check we're on the same IP range. The router is giving out DHCP, not the server. We, even though there's a server, there's no Active Directory involved. So I'm eliminating a bunch of things. So maybe 45 minutes into this, I decide to do a trace route. And it's immediate. There's one hop. The server and the workstations are on the same switch. And I ping them, you know, one less than a millisecond. Everything's perfect. But in the trace route, I notice there's a server name. I ping the server name and I can't connect. It's trying to ping a totally different network. It's trying to ping. Now, the server is 192.168.1.21. That's the server. And the workstation's like .102. So I see it's trying to ping 192.168.2.10. when I ping that server name, what redirects it to a different IP address? There's only one thing, and that's the host's file. If you ever see that, where you're trying to ping a server name or a domain name, anything where you're pinging by the name and not the IP address, and it's not going where you want, there's either a problem with DNS, or the very first thing, you check the host file. And wouldn't you know it, the host file has a hard-coded entry with the wrong IP address. Here's what must have happened. In order for this particular software to work, they had to build that into the host file. Clearly, when the two companies were, when there were these two companies together sharing this server, the IP address must have changed. And as that IP address changed of the server, nobody went into the host file or realized that the host file had to be edited. Once I edited the host file, it worked perfectly. So to keep it easy, I had them get a USB stick and I showed them how to go to all the other workstations and copy the host file. I had them do that on another workstation while I was on the phone, and it worked perfectly. Happy ending, easy solution by just editing the host file. And today, they called. They have some more work they want me to do, and I'm going to be able to do this remotely. It's perfect. Picked up a client by being able to be the hero by saving, solving this issue. And it appeared that multiple people have been working on this from outside the company for multiple days and were unable to solve that. So I was able to get in and under an hour solve the problem just by using the standard techniques and everything that I discuss here on the show, which is try pinging, try all the basics, all the easy things first, and keep working your way up until you figure out what's going on. That's it for the trenches stories. Now, I want to talk about a utility that I'm starting to play with that I read in the latest issue, the June issue of Maximum PC. I subscribe to two magazines on my Kindle, the digital versions of Maximum PC and PC World. And the reason those two, I still learn something every issue. And until that stops, I will continue to subscribe. If I pick up a magazine and I learn something, it made it worth it. What is it, like $1 a month? How can you not spend that to learn something new? So I'm going to share a couple things with you from this particular issue. I mean, there was a lot of other stuff, but this, the utility is called FixWin. Now, there's two versions. There's the version for Windows 7, which is version 1.2. Then there's a version 2 that's for Windows 8. FixWin is a list of different fixes. For Windows 7, it starts out when you launch it, you have a system file checker utility, so you can click that. Then you also can create a system restore point, and I certainly recommend that. On the left-hand side, you have Windows Explorer, Internet and Connectivity, Windows Mobile. You also have System Tools and Additional Fixes. So Windows Explorer, you can fix the recycle bin icon is missing. There's Explorer EXE won't start at boot in Windows. A CD drive or DVD drive is missing or it's not recognizable by Windows. There's a lot of similarity to the tweaking.com's all-in-one repair tool, which I believe is more extensive. But it doesn't hurt. Sometimes when like Internet Explorer doesn't work, I've had one utility not fix it, but a second one does. I don't think it hurts to have another tool on our USB stick that we can go to fix certain problems. There's Internet and Connectivity. So you can fix runtime error dialogues, any kind of Internet Explorer issue, reset all the Internet Explorer settings by just clicking fix and it clicks it. You have Windows Media. Now this is a great fix. How many of you have ran into the media, Windows Media Player just crashes whenever it feels like every now and then? Well, if it doesn't start and you have an error, there's actually a fix here for Windows Media Player. Here you go. Windows Media Player does not show the slideshow correctly. Media files associated with Windows Media Player are missing. You can just fix it. Lots of great little fixes here. System tools, again, an extensive list that will repair the firewall, that will reset the system restore to default. It when you create a restore point, you may get a message that the system restore has been turned off by a group policy. This will fix it. You can repair Windows Defender. I'm reading everything from the Windows 7. There's an additional files where there's more of how about Windows Update not working. That's a common problem that I run into, especially after infections. So you need to have these repair tools after you clean a system. When you click it, it wants to restart. Remember to click restart later. So I would add this to your USB stick. If the tools you go to does not fix the problem, whip this out and start, you know, applying these fixes and see if you can solve the problem. So that's the first two links for tonight, the FixWin utility. The next item, there was a little blurb that in the magazine that listed 10 essential browser extensions. This will apply to all the browsers, Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Chrome. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, because some of these extensions we've talked about on the show and I like and I use. The first one, Adblock Plus. This blocks obtrusive ads, including banners and pop-ups. But now you have to be careful. It could be blocking a pop-up that you want. One of the nice features, you can disable Adblock Plus for certain sites. Like if you're on a site and let's say they have a pop-up because it's a site that you normally purchase things from, you can just go over and check ignore for this site so it won't block anything. That's a really nice feature. The second one they have is LastPass, and this generates and stores passwords for all your web logins. You got to decide whether you're going to travel down this path and be married to LastPass for all of your passwords, because you'll always need it if you're ever going to go back into that website. I got mixed feelings about this. It's highly rated and recommended. Root, Web of Trust. I talk about this all the time. It's my go-to add-in for all browsers to stop the user from accidentally clicking on a link that will take them to a bad website. This always happens during searches. And I find so many users that when they go search and they don't have any warnings, they always click on whatever's in front of them. This will give you a stoplight, a red, a green, or a yellow light at the link. The more I roll out Woot to my clients, the less I run into visiting them to clean up infections. I see a direct relationship with using Woot, deploying Woot, and not having to revisit them for any infection. Great, great add-in. Tab Cloud. I have to try this. I haven't tried this. This saves and restores tabs across Chrome and Firefox. I use a different tab for saving my sessions. And I forget the name of the tab extension, but I'll put that also in the show notes. Disconnect views and blocks tracking from websites and social media. My Permissions Cleaner scans key online accounts such as Twitter, Facebook, and more, and see which apps have access to them. You can then manage it with just a few clicks. I think this is important because sometimes you may have accidentally given an app access to your Twitter or your Facebook feed. I'm always afraid of that. That's why I try to avoid any kind of invitations for doing something. Or the minute I get to that point, we want to connect and take control of your Facebook, and that's it, I stop. I will not go forward. what about some of the things you might have clicked on and not realized? This will kind of give you insight into what may be controlling your Twitter or your Facebook and you don't know it. Pocket. This is an extension that accesses all the articles, videos, and other online content you save for later using the Pocket service. Shareaholic quickly shares a link via a wide variety of services, including Facebook, WordPress, LinkedIn, and more. Okay, that's not as important as this next one. Evernote Web Clipper. Anybody who uses Evernote, Web Clipper, I love. I go in to my browser, and anytime I see something that is important, I make sure to send that to Evernote, especially building out my show notes for the next show. Maybe I'm browsing something on my iPad. I can quickly send it to the Evernote, and I just love that. So Evernote, Web Clipper, can't live without if you're an Evernote user. And then the last one here, HTTPS Everywhere. This is another one I haven't tried. So there's only a couple here I haven't tried. And this one is, it encrypts your communications with websites wherever possible for a safer browsing experience. So that certainly can't hurt, making sure that it's HTTPS Everywhere. I like that. 10 browser extensions that you might want to look into if you haven't heard of them, or maybe it's something that might help your browsing experience more. I have to live with all three browsers because I support so many clients that use all of them: Internet Explorer, Chrome, and Firefox. My primary browser is Firefox. That's just me. I'm a creature of habit. I have not embraced Chrome. And let me tell you, there's some things that I've been using Internet Explorer. When I'm cleaning systems now, I find more infections coming in Chrome than any of the other browsers. I'm actually seeing a complete reversal where Internet Explorer is almost becoming safer than Chrome and Firefox. So no longer do we just eliminate Internet Explorer and say, it's Microsoft, it's not safe. That's turned, and from what I'm seeing. Hopefully you'll enjoy these extensions. Time for email. We had the problem with the Windows 8.1 apps crashing on a listener's system. And he was trying everything, and he has to keep reinstalling the system. Last Thursday, upon reading that email, I immediately received this from Kate. Hi, Mike. I've had a couple of similar problems and solved them. Here's a couple of things that might help. Tweaking.com's all-in-one repair tool fixes problems with the Windows Store and coincidentally with apps. This is very interesting. An older version of Classic Shell creates a similar problem on a customer's machine. Uninstalling Classic Shell fixed it, and then installing the then current version didn't break it again. And there's a column that Kate writes on a weekly basis, and we have a link. I'm going to link her column that discusses this Classic Shell fix. Also, there is, and she has a blog post from TechNet, which is not the same problem, but similar enough that it's probably worth it for the listener to review, and it might give an idea. And this is, the Windows App Store doesn't load after an 8.1 upgrade. She gives, assuming the following, which I completely 100% agree, and I mentioned last week. I'm assuming the computer is malware-free, absolutely. Anytime you have anomalies or any kind of a problem, you must be able to guarantee that there's no malware on that system. You got to run the whole gambit of cleaning and malware removal tools. Then that he is signed in with a Microsoft account and then turned off any antivirus or any malware software, and see if that makes a difference. That's a great troubleshooting tip for anything, not just this particular problem. You want to make sure there's no malware. Turn off all security features to make sure that nothing's being blocked or stopped, especially if you're trying to communicate between you and the internet or you and another system. So multiple systems. You want to take any kind of software out of the question. You can slowly add the security layers back in after you get it working. I agree with this troubleshooting. And again, some great links here. This is going to be a large amount of links for this show, for the show notes. Thank you, Kate. I appreciate your help. This is Rob, and he's weighing in on this 8.1 app crash. The Windows 8.1 store app crashing is a common problem. Sometimes the issue is that the Microsoft account has not been verified. Sometimes verifying your account will fix the problems. Sometimes the tweaking.com Windows all-in-one repair tool will fix the problem. To verify your Microsoft account, you need to go into PC settings from the charms bar, then go into accounts. Then if you have not verified your account, you click on verify, and it will give you options to text the code if you have a mobile number or file or email address on file. Sometimes running the WS reset from a command prompt will fix the issue. A system refresh sometimes works and sometimes it doesn't. Oh boy, I hate to think that a refresh doesn't fix the problem when you've totally reinstalled everything. Two different recommendations now for tweaking.com's Windows all-in-one repair tool. This is from Tim. Tim sent me some feedback for the last show, a link to the E2000 router firmware. It really wasn't the firmware, it was the software. And that's what frustrated me with Linksys. They don't have the firmware listed out. I had to go to a third-party site that had the latest firmware and download that bin file and then use that on the router, which, again, it didn't help me. Recommendation here for the repair shop software. I now remember talking about this, but I've never really used it. And I remember trying to test this once way back. And I was accosted so viciously. I was attacked by such an aggressive salesman that I deleted the software right away. And this is for, I know their tactics have changed because the owner of the company, I think, actually reached out to me because he heard this on the show when I really took them to task on this. And it's Repair Shopper, RepairShopper.com. I'll never forget that, where I was attacked every day on my cell phone by this salesman that was so aggressive that I never wanted to see the software ever again. And it might have been the greatest piece of repair shop software in the world, but their guerrilla sales tactics turned me off so bad that I wouldn't even give it another thought. I will take a look at this. And also, I think for the listener that wrote in looking for a repair shop, you definitely want to look at this. They'll give you a trial. You can test it out. We also, I know there's another email that talks about this repair shop in more detail. And this is, let's see, he learned about it from a YouTube link on a podcast. I will link that. And this is from Tim. Tim, thank you. Now, this is a little more in depth from Jason. The POS software for an IT shop. You had a listener wanting a POS software for a computer shop. We use Repair Shopper. It's made specifically for a computer repair shop, tablet and phone repair companies, and managed service companies. We have been using it for over a year. They have pricing for small shops to big chains with multiple locations. We have 8 techs using the system, and it's mobile friendly, so all the techs can update tickets, track time, add parts to a ticket to be billed. It has a dashboard with all the tickets and status that we display on a 50-inch TV in the back of our shop. Also, it does prepaid hours for techs like us that sell prepaid hours for our managed services. Also, since we bill quarterly for these prepaid hours, it is reoccurring invoices, so an invoice is created and emailed automatically. Boy, that's something that'll save me a ton of time. I have to look at that. That's my biggest problem, is staying on top of my invoicing for the quarterly retainer invoices. It also has an awesome parts order and RMA tracking system as well. And we signed up for Authorize.net, and it integrates with it. And man, it makes it super nice to get paid fast when you email invoices via a link or contact customers have a portal to log in and see tickets. Make tickets and see and pay invoices and improve and approve estimates. It is all you need in one package. And being hosted, it makes it nice to access from anywhere. And they have a ton of integrations with third-party software. We use the integrations for GFI, TeamViewer, and Chimp, Google Calendar, not to mention support is great and support is super fast. The super nice feature we love is the integration with Google Calendar. The ticket is assigned with the appointment, and of course, this has the address as well. So, as soon as we put in our appointment, it's on our Google Apps for work calendars. It automatically goes to the text calendar that you assign to it. Then, on our Android phones, it will pop up and let you know when you need to leave from your current location to arrive on time, even taking into account traffic. Wow, that's awesome. And when you're ready to click the map icon on the appointment on your phone, and Google Maps will pop up and navigate you there. This is huge time saver. The money we spent on this software is worth every penny. I could keep going on, but just check it out. And this is Jason. Jason, thank you so much for such a thorough explanation of Repair Shopper. This is from Rob. Thank you so much for mentioning MiniTool on your last show. I had a client whose hard drive has failed. I pulled the hard drive out of the laptop and tried to read it on another computer. Windows would see the drive as a drive letter F, but could not read it. I happen to remember a listener's email mentioning MiniTool. The client has some very important documents that she needs to get pulled off, and she did not have a backup. I downloaded the MiniTool Power Recovery Free Edition. The free edition is limited to 1 gig of data recovery at a time, but she only had a few documents, so I figured I would give it a try. Once the new hard drive was installed, the Windows loaded, I plugged her old hard drive using an adapter into one of the USB ports, installed the program, and one of the options was to view damaged partition. I selected it, went through it, and it scanned the hard drive and found the partition on the old hard drive that Windows would not read. Told it to scan the drive, and lo and behold, it pulled up a list of the files on our hard drive. I selected the documents folder and was able to save her documents to the new hard drive. This tool saved my clients hundreds of dollars because the only option was to send it off to a data recovery center. Hopefully, out of all of this, the client will learn that she needs to back up her important stuff. You know, sometimes some people will never learn. Hopefully she did learn this and that you set her up on a nice, easy backup solution. Great show. Keep up the good work. And hopefully you and Carrie will team up for another Tech Vet soon. Each week we come so close to recording a Tech Vet. I promise you, we are trying. This Wednesday, it was a communications snafu. He didn't get my email in time, and then I thought we weren't going to record, and then I made other plans. We're always something stupid right now is getting in the way between the two of us recording. We're going to get there. We're going to get back on track. I promise you, we have not pod faded. This is another email for Rob, and he has the link to the mini tool, which I think I did link last week in the show notes. This is from Glenn. Quick question. Love the show. I am setting up a new laptop for my sister with Windows 7, and I wondered if you could tell me which show talked about what to install on a new Windows 7 install. I know you covered this in the past, but I can't find the show or shows. I know you are busy, so just the show numbers will be enough. Thanks again for the great show. I don't think I ever quite phrased it like that, that if you have a new Windows 7, this is what you have to have. What you're probably remembering is 99.com. That's the first thing I do once I get the drivers loaded. And I make sure that when you go to Control Panel, Drivers Manager, you have no exclamation points. You want to make sure there's no other that you're not loading the drivers for. You want to make sure all drivers are loaded. Once that's done, go to 99.com. And I think the basics are the following, and I will go there right now. 99 offers so much. The first thing is web browsers. So you want to pick Chrome, Opera, or Firefox. Usually for a new system, I pick Chrome and Firefox. Now let's move on to messaging. Does your sister need Skype? If she does, click it. Media. iTunes. So many people have iTunes, I normally click that. And VLC. To me, that is the absolute minimum for being able to view all video and audio. So VLC. Now the runtimes column. You want Java 8, you want Silverlight, you want Air, and you want Shockwave. Now you may not have to have Air. If an app needs it, it will install it. But minimum, I run into so many things that need Silverlight and Shockwave, add them. For imaging, does she play with pictures? This is your opportunity to put Picasa or Irfan View if you edit pictures. Now let's go on to documents. If the user does not have Adobe Acrobat Pro, then I put the following on the computer. I put the Adobe Reader, which is now called Reader DC, and I put PDF Creator. Now you can view PDFs and you can create PDFs. That's the minimum that I put. If they have Adobe Acrobat Pro, I do not put them on. I will not put Adobe Reader. I let them have just Adobe Acrobat Pro to handle all of the PDFs so there's no confusion. Security. Since you have Windows 7, do not buy any other antivirus software. Click Essentials here. That's Microsoft Security Essentials. Also, I like Malwarebytes, so I'll click that. Now the rest really is just, does that user need it or not? As a minimum compression, I always install 7-Zip on every single computer that I touch. 7-Zip, very, very important. Now you can unarchive, you can unzip, unrar, rar or zip files, or work with the native 7-Zip format. Important so people can work with compressed files. Online storage, it's a matter of taste and a matter of what you've subscribed to. If you use Dropbox, Google Drive, Mosey, or OneDrive, or SugarSync, then I would check the appropriate box. By default, if I don't know what my client is going to be using or I don't know who's going to get this system, I do not load any of them. Then you have others like Evernote, and then there's other utilities I don't even get into. If the person is going to be doing burning of CDs or DVDs, then I check CD Burner XP. The short answer, Glenn, is go to 99.com and you have all the categories laid in front of you, check the appropriate programs that you want, then click to get the installer, and it will install all of those programs where you don't have to go to each of those websites. This is a tremendous tool to use for setting up new systems. This is Will from Indy, and he sent me a couple emails here. The first one, and I will link, is a show for Steve Gibson, Security Now, and I haven't listened in a while. He does show 502 is dedicated to TrueCrypt, and after that assessment was done, so I'm going to link that if you want to know everything that's happening with TrueCrypt and Steve Gibson's opinion, which I do value. You want to take a listen to Security Now, and I will have that episode linked in the show notes. Thank you, Will. Will sent me another email here with lots of links, and here we go. I have two emails for you. Thanks for reading my message about Mini Tool Partition Wizard on show 543. My other message is in response to that discussion. You asked for recommendations for small business routers. Here are my suggestions and links. And he has a lot of links, but he's also recommending the DDWRT. Now, I'll put these links in the show notes, but I will not implement that in a corporate environment. It's just personal. Now, there's some non-DDRT versions of a couple products, and he has some links to the ASUS and another product. So I'm going to put them in the show notes. After reading about the recent nightmare scenarios of corrupted and hacked router firmware in the last few years, compounded by the callous neglect of the router manufacturers, I will not use any but open sourced firmware controls and UI on my routers. That is a very interesting view of the routers. He's got a point that if the manufacturer consistently comes out with their firmware and there's holes and security holes and hacked, yet we have an open source solution, man, I am so on the fence on this for clients. This is a great debate topic, and you might want to weigh in on your opinion. And Will definitely stands on the side of the open source firmware for the router, and I appreciate that. And don't forget, you can recycle old Linksys WRT54XX routers with the DDWRT firmware. That's actually a great recommendation. And they become better than new. These old blue box conversions make excellent intranet NAT walls for small businesses. I bought old Linksys WRT54G blue box for $20. And upgrade it to DDWRT firmware. This is the easiest firmware to flash, the flash process of them all. And I've bricked a couple other used routers. He has another email for me on organizing all the equipment and everything that I was talking about, which I'm actually going to be embarking on this Saturday, where I'm getting some new shelving and going to get an inventory. And I have my kids helping me after I'm done consulting, where we're going to help organize everything. I'm looking forward to that, to get a handle on my inventory. Will, thank you for taking the time to put all those links together with all the different router options, and I will put them all in the show notes. I really appreciate the time and effort you put into your response. And I still have a couple of your emails that I will cover on next week's show, which, by the way, real quick, next Thursday, if you want to catch the show live, look for me tweeting or Facebooking what time I'm going to be doing it. It may be a couple hours earlier. Now, I normally come on about 7:30 p.m. Eastern time to do my pre-show. Tonight I did 7 o'clock and I'm already tired of talking. Sort of did a whole show before the show. Next week, I'm going to be traveling Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I'm not going to have time to edit the show. if everything goes well, I might go on the air about 6 p.m. Eastern time, have the show, close it out, and then begin editing so I can post the show Thursday night, because I'm not going to have time Friday or Saturday. And if for some reason I don't edit the show Thursday night, it's going to slip till Sunday night before I can edit it. And I always like to edit the show and get it out as fast as possible. But sometimes the real world just interferes heavily into my schedule and clients. Here's the final email for the night, and this is from Fred. And I actually need your help on this one. I have not heard you speak about Microsoft Azure, A-Z-U-R-E, cloud platform. Wouldn't it be great, all client application packages and data be on the cloud? Azure website has a calculator for monthly cost. This is from Fred. Fred, I do not have any info on Microsoft Azure. So here's what I'm asking everybody out there. If someone could put together a detailed email on that service, and if you've used it, the good, the bad, the ugly, or even better, record a voicemail response as an MP3 and email it to me, or call the number, call my Skype number, 240-949-2450, and leave me a detailed voicemail, and I will put it on the show. That would be tremendous if you could record a response to talk about it. Try to keep it under 5 minutes if you're going into detail. The sweet spot of a voicemail is 2 to 3 minutes. Keep it short and sweet if you can, and give me the pros and cons of the Microsoft Azure service, and I will get it on the air and respond to Fred. Fred, thanks for the question. Remember, if you purchase anything from Amazon, or you know anybody, family members, friends, relatives, please use my link, amazon.mikenation.net. Or just go to miketechshow.com, click on the Amazon link at the top left-hand side of the website. You can't miss it. Click on that. It'll bring you to Amazon. And now anything you purchased, a small commission comes back to the Mike Tech Show to support the show. But your price stays the same. So why not help me out? I want to thank everybody for your use of my link on the website, your use of the Amazon.MikeNation.net link. It really helps. It keeps the lights on. It pays bills for hosting the show and equipment. I thank you. I also want to thank Instant House Call for being a sponsor of the show. Remember, InstantHouseCall.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed to the podcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I will speak with you next week, same time, same channel, maybe a little earlier. That's it. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.